Okay, we're talking to a real WTMA broadcasting legend, a guy.
A real one.
A real one, not one of those pretenders.
No fakes here. Now, before we begin the interview, John, I got to ask you if we can do like 60 minutes. If there's a question that you ask that I don't like, I can rip off the microphone and throw it down and say, that's it.
That's exactly what you can do. You can do. But hopefully these will all be questions that you like.
I can do that.
As you probably know, it's Boobie Nash. Boobie Nash, thank you so much for spending some time with us talking about your time at WTMA.
Well, my closest friends call me Boobie, okay? So feel free to call me Mr. Nash.
He hasn't lost it. Now, you came to WTMA in 1966, right?
1966. It was the week before July 4th. I came into town with 10 bucks in my pocket. I had borrowed 50. It cost 40 bucks to go from Greensboro, North Carolina to Charleston. So I spent the 40 and kept the 10. I came down to fill in for a month. That's true. It actually came from Buffalo to return my car in Greensboro, which was being repossessed because I had been out of work for a month. I was just resting. And then a friend of mine called me and said, would I come down to TMA in Charleston just to fill in for a month? So I didn't have any money. So a friend in Greensboro said, here's 50 bucks. Go on down there and fill in for a month. And so I came and I had 10 bucks. One of the jocks let me stay at his apartment until I got my first paycheck, which was 3 weeks later. I lived on salads and crackers for the first 3 weeks. And then in the fourth week, I told them I was getting ready to go back to Buffalo because I was only there for a month. And they liked it so much that they said, please stay. And they gave me a raise. And so I stayed. That was in 66. And when I finally left TMA, we were in the 80s.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah.
So you were doing the night show when you came?
Yes. I did 7 till 1 o'clock. We signed off at 1 o'clock in the morning.
All right. Now, that was the Dock Street Theater days, right?
That's right. We were over the Dock Street Theater. I would wave to the people coming into the shows and hissing and booing. And we had a lot of fun at the Dock Street Theater.
So it was nice to be at that location as opposed to just being in a shopping center or being, you know, out at the transmitter site.
Yeah. There's something impressive about saying broadcasting live from atop the Dock Street Theater. You know, it made you sound like you were more than a disc jockey, you know. But, yeah, we really enjoyed it.
Well, what were your first impressions of the radio station other than, hey, they're paying me to work here for a couple of weeks?
Oh, WTMA was a great radio station. It stayed on top of all the latest broadcasting facilities. The equipment was up to date. I was really impressed. In fact, it was big-time radio. It didn't have anything less than what WABC would have in New York. I mean, they were up to date. And the talent was great. You had Charlie Kerwin, who was Charlie Brown. Dave Lloyd was there. These were not big names yet, but they were soon to become big names. So I was impressed, and I was a little intimidated. But I was only there for a month, so I didn't have to worry about keeping my job. I wasn't there to do that. So they put me on at night. And I just did what I wanted, and I had a good time. At least I was having a good time, and they liked what they heard, so I was excited to be part of the team. I consider myself probably the worst of all the disc jockeys. Well, I never considered myself a disc jockey. I just like to entertain, you know, have fun, have a party, and play records. My dad always said to me, when are you going to get a job? And I said, well, I got a job. I'm working at a radio station. He said, playing records is not a job, you know. But I made a career out of it and raised a family on it and did it for 30 years.
Who are some of the other names from the late 60s that you remember working with?
Oh, we had Wayne Long in the news department. In fact, he was the news department. And in those days, you only had one newsman, and they called it a news department. Wayne Long did a wonderful job. Let me see who was on. John Smith. I call him the two-story outhouse. John Smith, whose real name was Dick Andert. And he's the one who sang the theme. And I don't know whether we've got that around anymore, but it's the big boob. It's the big boob.
It's on one of your air checks. It's on the website.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. He sang that and did that, and he went out to California. I'm trying to think of who the morning man was at the time. It was probably Dave Lloyd. Ron Childers was there at that time. When I came there, there was a transition of people. It's hard to remember who was there. At that time, you didn't stay at a radio station more than maybe 3 years. That would be tops, sometimes just a year. And being that TMA in Charleston was not a major market, it was a good market, but it wasn't a major market, and people were aiming for Cincinnati and Pittsburgh and Buffalo and those type of cities. And so they would come through here, get themselves some good air checks and a good rating, and then present themselves to a larger market. When I came here, I wasn't planning on staying, but when they hired me, I was not a mover. I worked Buffalo, New York, Albany, New York, Greensboro, North Carolina, and Charleston. That was the extent of my moves in 30 years. So I was known as a unique person to stay in one place for so long.
But you made a name for yourself, and once you make a name for yourself and start getting endorsements and starting being able to ask for salary increases and hopefully make more each year, it gets hard to leave, especially when you're in a place like Charleston, right?
Right. How I happened to get more money was I would quit every year, and they would say, "Don't quit, we'll give you more money." I said, okay, I'll stay. But I left twice for about 2 weeks. Once I went down to Florida and worked in Jacksonville. That only lasted 2 weeks. They weren't ready for the big boom in Jacksonville. But I was doing it for a raise. And the management, when I said, I think I'll come back to Charleston, they said, "Well, we'll bring you back. We haven't, you know," I wouldn't give them a chance to fill in my slot. You know, I was only gone 2 weeks. And I did that twice. I went to Buffalo, or actually Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm. And I did that for 5 weeks. And couldn't stand the winter. It was already October, threatening the snow. And I said to my wife, I said, "We got to go back home." Keeping in mind that Buffalo and Niagara Falls was originally my hometown. But once I came to Charleston, I fell in love with the city, fell in love with the people, and I was having fun. And in my life, that was the most important thing, is having fun. I think more people ought to think that way, just having fun with life. Some of it was challenging. It wasn't always happy times, but I was having fun. I would have done it for free, as I've said. I think a lot of disc jockeys would say that. They would do it for free if they were really, you know, into radio and having fun. It was more a hobby than it was a job.
Do you remember how much preparation you put into going on the air?
Absolutely none. Really. Except for doing drop-ins where, you know, I would have voices come in and talk with me, or what we call drop-ins, funny voices, funny sayings. Except for that, I didn't really prepare.
What about the jokes and stuff you use? Were those pretty much off the top of your head?
Off the top of the head.
Did you use a service?
Well, after a few years, I learned that you could use a service, you know, that there was such a thing as people who would write. But I didn't find anybody had the same sense of humor I did, except for this one service. I would get like Robert Orban, who wrote for Bob Hope. Well, even though I thought Bob Hope was funny, it wasn't my type of material. Mm-hmm. I like quick, easy stuff, you know, not too complicated. And there was a service called The Electric Weenie. Tom somebody wrote it, and it was my sense of humor. Typical one-liner would be, I'm going over to my mother-in-law's for shish kebab. I like the way she makes her shish kebab. She lights an arrow and shoots it into a garbage can. You know, just quick, off-the-wall stuff. I like that. And so if you prepare for that, it doesn't come off.
Now, one of the air checks that's on the website from the late 60s, it almost sounds like you're doing talk radio, because you're talking about issues. I think you were talking about the blue law and how you were against it, and how it was really, really stupid. Did you do that kind of thing often, or just whenever you felt like it?
No, just and the idea was to shock people, because disc jockeys never said anything that was important. You know, we just didn't, except for the time and temperature. You know, all the rest of the stuff didn't amount to much, you know, because it was fun. It was, Top 40 was supposed to be fun. You know, we didn't get into serious issues. And so to make a statement that the blue laws were stupid would put you on the edge. People would say, "Oh, he's going to get fired for saying that." See, in those days, you know, people were shocked, you know, at that. Well, today it takes a lot more to shock people on radio. But in those days, for a disc jockey to actually give his opinion about something, and I didn't care about the blue laws. I really didn't. I didn't care. You know, I had my brown bag. That's all that mattered. But it was to get people saying, "Did you hear what Booby Nash said today?" In fact, they ended up putting up a billboard that said that. "Did you hear what Booby Nash said today?" It was to be outrageous. I think today we've pushed the envelope so far that nothing really is outrageous anymore. You can't shock people anymore.
It's pretty hard. People are trying it, you know, right and left, and it's amazing some of the crap they put on the air.
Right. Although See, we couldn't use that word. We could not use the word crap on the radio. You'd be fired.
Yeah.
Because I tried it, you know, and they threatened me. That was a naughty word. See, you're going to get in trouble.
That was the Booby Nash Show.
That did it. I'm throwing off the microphone right now. Don't ask me another question about crap. All right.
The Booby Nash Show. At night, were you geared more towards the teenage audience in your content?
Well, I thought I was. You know, I thought of young people when I go, well, I was a young person myself. I was 25. You know, that's still young. And I thought I was, but they said that I had 65% of the audience, and 69% of that 65% was adult.
Wow.
They advertised that. I had more adults telling me, I would never listen to you. And I said, why? They said, because just the other night you said. See? The actual thing we did that I believed in radio was that you either got them to love you or hate you. No one listens to someone that is just okay.
You have to be polarizing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, if somebody asks me, how's John Quincy on the radio? Ever listen to John Quincy? And I say, yeah, he's okay. You know, that's not going to stimulate anybody to listen to. But if I say, wow, you should have heard him yesterday. Yeah. And that's basically what Rush Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
He's just doing things to be outrageous. And a lot of times he says things that he really means. But a lot of times he's saying things just to stir you up, to get you to talk.
Yeah, Rush is an entertainment show. And as I used to tell the people that worked for me when I was programming WTMA, that if you're not entertaining, all you are is public affairs. And there's a reason why public affairs, you know, shows up on Sunday morning at 6 o'clock.
Right. If you want a real opinion, you would listen to Sean Hannity, which follows Rocky D.
Yeah.
On TMA.
Yeah.
Sean Hannity is more not trying to be so show business as he is issues oriented.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the more serious Rush Limbaugh, but both of them get good ratings.
So, do you listen to a lot of talk radio now?
I do. When I listen to, I was never interested in music. I liked the music we played. I liked rhythm and blues more than anything else. That's what I'm really into. I like the Four Tops, the Supremes. I like the very melodic songs, Chuck Jackson, those people. I would have done well on black-oriented radio. That was my type of music, and I'm glad that through the years TMA had a lot of that on, so I felt comfortable there. But other than that, I wasn't really interested in the music. I was interested in what was going on in between the records and having fun and making a party of it. So today, if I do listen to radio, and I don't listen to much, and I don't know what the reason for, I guess I'm just tired of radio, but I do listen to talk a lot.
Let's talk about John Tritton, who came to WTMA, I guess, in the late 60s as program director.
Right. I worked with John on WAIR in Winston-Salem, and he was doing the all-night show, and I was doing the early night show in Winston-Salem. When I left there, I went back to Greensboro, then to Buffalo, then I came down here for the month. After I was here for a while, Charlie Kerwin, who asked me to come down, also knew John Tritton. And as I said, we were in transition then. A lot of disc jockeys leaving, a lot coming, who wanted to work on TMA. We had air checks coming in every day. People wanted to work at TMA. It was the place either used as a stepping stone or let me just get there, I'll stay, you know. And we needed someone. We asked John Tritton to come down. I think he took the morning. Then he became program director. And through the years, in the 70s, he became general manager of WTMA. So he wanted to get into the sales and the managing and the programming, and I was in the entertainment field. So I was just the opposite. We worked together throughout those years. John was a great guy. He had great ideas for contests. He's the one who came up with all those wild contests, you know, high-low that you can hear on some of the air checks. And Diamond a Day, we gave away a diamond a day. Don't ask me if they were real. I have no idea. I never saw one, so I don't even know if the winners were real. No, we didn't do that. We had real stuff. But John just moved up the ladder and became management and still held down the morning show once in a while. I mean, he liked to broadcast.
What was he like to work for?
Well, we were close friends. I'll say one thing for him. He was fair. He was a very open. He'd let you get away with stuff on the radio. I mean, he would. I mean, he'd have a strict format, and if you broke it, he'd just warn you, you know, if it went too far. He'd let you break it a little. He always believed in a frame around his format instead of a steel one. And to give you an idea, some stations would say you give time and temperature only between the records and give the call letters and that's it. You couldn't say, hi, how are you, or good morning, everybody. I mean, no wild ad libs like that. But John was easy to work for. He really was. He was a smart butt in his way of talking with you. Like, he always called me DA, or if I can say it on the radio, dumbass. He would, you know, he'd say, why'd you do that, you dumbass? And I think I was hurt once in a while by it, but being that we were close friends, he did me a lot of favors, outside. And John was one that he would take the staff out for lunch and dinner or invite you over to the house and let you watch him work on his car. He liked that, you know. So he was very into the staff. He wasn't separated from the staff.
He was a good people person?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He would be the boss at work, but your best friend after work.
What about Chuck Smith, the longtime owner of WTMA?
Chuck Smith was a businessman first. I don't know if he was really real to us or not. You know, he I think he played us a lot, you know. He pretended he liked us, that we really meant something to him. But, you know, when you were gone, you were gone. You know, if you could bring in money, Chuck was one of those. If your ratings were good, you were his best friend. If your ratings were bad, you're gone, you know. And he was strictly a businessman. Nice guy, but a businessman.
WTMA really concentrated on ratings?
Oh, yeah. We lived and died by them. Every 13 weeks, you knew where you stood with that radio station. The object was to get the ratings.
So he would actually fire people for bad ratings?
Oh, yeah, if you had a real low rating. I remember someone who had a low rating twice. They let you go by the first time, and they might blame it on the music. They might blame it on something. They'd give you a chance. But two low ratings in a row, you were pretty much gone. And you pretty well knew what your ratings were going to be by what kind of show you were having. I mean, if we put someone on, they sounded good on their air check, but when they got on the air, they just didn't, you know, have that click. You pretty much knew they weren't going to be around too long. We didn't have too many that were hired that way.
Did you work with Ted Turner? Any? Did you know much about him?
I worked for Ted Turner. Is that what you asked?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you have any dealings with Ted Turner?
I didn't work with him. No one works with Ted Turner. Yes, I remember the day he came in. He had bought the radio station from Chuck Smith. He acted like he was anxious to meet Booby Nash, and I was so thrilled. I didn't really know who he was. I knew he owned an outdoor sign company in Atlanta, but I didn't, you know, he wasn't the Ted Turner he is today. Or, you know, I shook his hand and said it was a pleasure to meet him. But he acted as though we were somebody. I was impressed with him. In later years, I wasn't so much impressed with him, just simply because I don't like his politics. I don't like his attitude. But when you have money like that, you can afford to have an attitude like that. But he was very pleasant when he bought TMA and very outgoing to us. And, you know, the new broom sweeps clean didn't happen with him. He kept everybody on staff.
How long were you doing the night show at TMA?
I did the night show from 1966 to about 1970. I did it for about 4 years, and then I moved into afternoon drive. Then I did mornings for a while. Then I think I went back to afternoon drive. I was there a total of 11 to 12 years.
Okay.
So that's a long time to be at one station. I switched over for a while to KTM. When WKTM, which was my first FM station, and stereo was brand new. They were selling these converters so you can convert your radio to FM stereo. And I was in that transition, but I wasn't happy there, and I went back to TMA. Every time I was unhappy somewhere, I went back to TMA.
Kind of like home, huh?
Oh, home, it was home. Yes, it was home.
Of all the radio stations you work for, would you say WTMA holds a special place?
Would
be the number one in your...
Oh, yes, yeah. I spent 3 years in Buffalo and 1 year in Albany, New York, and I spent 3 years in Greensboro. And Greensboro, WPET, which was a daytimer, beat all the full-timers. I was there from 63 to 66, and I thought that was the greatest little radio station. But TMA was home. TMA felt good. We had a lot of people come through, but every person who came there just fit right into the family.
Why do you think WTMA was so successful for so many years? I mean, they did have competition, especially in the 70s. People tried to take down WTMA, and didn't really happen until WCSE got really serious at the end of the 70s and started spending a lot of money that WTMA wasn't willing to spend. And, of course, by that time, the writing was on the wall for music radio on AM. Why do you think TMA was as big and as huge and as special as it is?
Well, because it was first with everything. We kept updating. We did contests. Other stations did contests, but we just kept doing it. And somebody said we were buying the audience. But you could listen to the high-low game, which was you had to guess what amount of money was in the jackpot. And if you guessed too high, a little thing goes whoop, up and it'd say, you're too high. Well, I was listening to an air check the other day, and the person guessed. Now, the advertisement is, we're giving away thousands of dollars, okay? And the girl guesses $26.50. And the machine says, whoop, too high. And I said, we're giving away thousands of dollars, and $26 is too high? I said, so it wasn't really buying an audience. We had fun games. We had fun disc jockeys. We had fun games, and we played the fun records. I mean, the record, you didn't have to worry about bad words in the records. They were always upbeat. We played at least two fast records to one slow. Everything was upbeat. And we didn't take ourselves serious, and I think that helped us. Then when CSC at the end came on, they did two things that were correct. They, first of all, beat our money, because we weren't buying our audience. We did give away thousands of dollars, but we made a lot of winners. Our gimmick was to have a lot of winners, not have one winner win a lot of big money. Well, CSC went big money with one winner. And that sort of drew people. Plus, they put on the first dual team that really connected with the people, CJ and Buzz. And they were outrageous. Buzz was just being Buzz, and his whole life was outrageous. And so the people warmed to him. CJ was a wisecracking sort of guy. And they pushed the envelope on what could be said. They would use the word crap and it drew people, where TMA tried to stay the family-oriented and didn't keep up, mm-hmm. and sort of slowly withered.
Yeah, all good things must come to an end.
Would be a good word to use.